just as much as they belong to each individual. Therefore, the philosopher thinks of the person who makes it possible for him to use and enjoy these things, of the person who exempts him when the state's dire need summons to arms, to sentry duty, to the defense of the walls, and to the manifold exactions of war, and he gives thanks to the helmsman of his state. This is what philosophy teaches most of all: honorably to avow the debt of benefits received, and honorably to pay them. Sometimes, however, the acknowledgement itself constitutes payment. Our philosopher will therefore acknowledge that he owes a large debt to the ruler who makes it possible, by his management and foresight, for him to enjoy rich leisure, control of his own time, and a tranquility uninterrupted by public employments. Shepherd, a god this leisure gave to me, for he shall be my god eternally. And, even if such leisure as that of our poet owes a great debt to its author, though its greatest boon is this: as thou canst see, he let me turn my cattle out to feed, and play what fancy pleased on rustic reed. How highly are we to value this leisure of the philosopher, which is spent among the gods, and makes us gods? Yes, this is what I mean, Lucilius, and I invite you to heaven by a shortcut. Sextius used to say that Jupiter had no more power than the good man. Of course, Jupiter has more gifts which he can offer to mankind. But when you are choosing between two good men, the richer is not necessarily the better, any more than, in the case of two pilots of equal skill in managing the tiller, you would call him the better whose ship is larger and more imposing. In what respect is Jupiter superior to our good man? His goodness lasts longer, but the wise man does not set a lower value upon himself just because his virtues are limited by a briefer span. Or take two wise men. He who has died at a greater age is not happier than he whose virtue has been limited to fewer years. Similarly, a god has no advantage over a wise man in point of happiness, even though he has such an advantage in point of years. That virtue is not greater, which lasts longer. Jupiter possesses all things, but he has surely given over the possession of them to others. The only use of them which belongs to him is this: he is the cause of their use to all men. The wise man surveys and scorns all the possessions of others as calmly as does Jupiter, and regards himself with the greater esteem because, while Jupiter cannot make use of them, he, the wise man, does not wish to do so. Let us, therefore, believe Sextius when he shows us the path of perfect beauty and cries, "This is the way to the stars. This is the way, by observing thrift, self-restraint, and courage." The gods are not disdainful or envious. They open the door to you. They lend a hand as you climb. Do you marvel that man goes to the gods? God comes to men. Nay, he comes nearer. He comes into men. No mind that has not God is good. Divine seeds are scattered throughout our mortal bodies. If a good husbandman receives them, they spring up in the likeness of their source and of a parity with those from which they came. If, however, the husbandman be bad, like a barren or marshy soil, he kills the seeds and causes tares to grow up instead of wheat. Farewell. Letter 74. on virtue as a refuge from worldly distractions. Your letter has given me pleasure, and has roused me from sluggishness. It has also prompted my memory, which has been, for some time, slack and nerveless. You are right, of course, my dear Lucilius, in deeming the chief means of attaining the happy life to consist in the belief that the only good lies in that which is honorable. For anyone who deems other things to be good puts himself in the power of fortune and goes under the control of another. But he who has in every case defined the good by the honorable is happy with an inward happiness. One man is saddened when his children die. Another is anxious when they become ill. A third is embittered when they do something disgraceful or suffer a taint in their reputation. One man, you will observe, is tortured by passion for his neighbor's wife, another by passion for his own. You will find men who are completely upset by failure to win an election, and others who are actually plagued by the offices which they have won. But the largest throng of unhappy men among the host of mortals are those whom the expectation of death, which threatens them on every hand, drives to despair. For there is no quarter from which death may not approach. Hence, like soldiers scouting in the enemy's country, they must look about in all directions and turn their heads at every sound. Unless the breast be rid of this fear, one lives with a palpitating heart. You will readily recall those who have been driven into exile and dispossessed of their property. You will also recall, and this is the most serious kind of destitution, those who are poor in the midst of their riches. You will recall men who have suffered shipwreck, or those whose sufferings resemble shipwreck, for they were untroubled and at ease, when the anger, or perhaps the envy of the populace, a missile most deadly to those in high places, dismantled them like a storm which is wont to rise when one is most confident of continued calm, or like a sudden stroke of lightning which even causes the region round about it